This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 32, When Time Runs Out. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about captaincy, we talk about spin bowling, and we talk about batting. It's just me and Gareth this week, so we chat through a couple of problems with a couple of listeners, and we also talk about how you're going to develop captains, and surprisingly enough, I run out of time in this week's soapbox. Listen in to hear the disaster. Welcome again to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This, of course, as you know by now, is your guide to better cricket. Whether you coach it or whether you play it or anything else, you can find out more about the game in half an hour, and hopefully by the end, you will have improved yourself in some way or another. My name's David Hinchliffe, and I look after things. And helping me to help you is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
How are you? You all right?
Very good, yes. Just you and me this week. We're missing a member of the team. Sam Lafferty is normally with us. But he is claiming that where he has gone on holiday has no internet access. But I suspect he just wants to have a little bit of a skive off. What do you reckon?
Well, it must be a very distant place that he's gone to on holiday, mate, to not have Wi-Fi access. I should imagine he's in an island somewhere in the South Pacific, putting his feet in the water with a straw hat on.
Well, he hasn't disclosed his location other than saying South Wales. So, but having lived there for many years, I know the internet is excellent under normal circumstances.
Well, there you go. Not quite straw hat weather down there at the moment, I shouldn't have thought, but never mind. Well, I'm sure he's having a lovely time, so let's crack on.
Yeah, let's leave the conjecture as an exercise for the listener and talk about some cricket instead. One of the things I was thinking about this week was our club is in a bit of a transition phase at the moment in terms of captaincy. There's some older guys who are sort of coming to the end of their time as captain, and they're looking to try and move the captaincy onto somebody else. And I was wondering how we could best identify and develop captains for the future, not only fulfilling the role as it comes up next season, and whatever positions they are, the first team, the second team, the development team, whichever teams they are, but also guys who are younger and perhaps not quite ready for captaincy yet, but maybe you'd be thinking about that in 3, 5, maybe even 10 years' time. So, Gareth, what's your experiences of identifying captains, and how do you go about helping guys who you think might be good leaders take on that role a little bit at a time rather than being thrown in at the deep end?
Well, I think it's all about your circumstances. And let's look at your situation there, David. You've got, hopefully, a long-term project at the club, which goes on for a number of years. So you've got different captaincy needs. And I'm in a position as well where I hope to be at Millfield for a long time. And my job very much is to develop leaders and to develop people. So I've got a bit of a succession plan, actually, where I am now. And obviously, each year group that goes through has got its captain that goes through with it, but we also provide opportunities in that. So, for example, my under-15s team last year had 3 or 4 captains over the course of the fixture list that we had. We identified the games where we wanted our guy who was our number one captain to do, but also we created opportunities for others to have a go at it as well, because there's no way that you can say that the guy who's under-15 captain in this year is going to go through all the way through his cricket career being captain, because it just simply doesn't work like that. And if it has worked like that, he's either a very good leader or he's just stayed at the same level and not developed himself as a cricketer. So we've got to develop leaders throughout. So what do you look for? Well, in Shane Warne, you had an inspirational guy who was tactically very, very aware. In Michael Vaughan, you had somebody who was tactically aware but knew his players and understood motivation. In Graham Smith, you had somebody who led from the front and really asked everybody to follow his lead. There are so many different types of captains. You got the Mike Brearley one, who was very psychological in the way he went about it and got to know his players on different levels. So it's about identifying, I suppose, is there an individual way or a way that you want the club to develop their leadership profile that goes down through the age groups, or are you looking for different people to do different things and to have different strengths and traits? And I'd always go down the latter one, to be brutally honest with you. I'd look at what each individual has got, because leadership is such a big thing. It's not just one way of doing stuff. So, you know, within my under-15s last year that we had a leader who led from the front. We had a leader that got a good feel for the environment. We had a leader that actually I gave with the hope that it would help his own performance, and it did. So that came off, which was really good. So, you know, there's so many different ways of looking at leadership, and I'd encourage you in your position to have a look at all the characters that you've got and go about it in an individual way rather than a generic one.
Captaincy is such a multi-faceted thing, as you've said, Gareth. It makes a difference where you're captaining, as well as what style of captaincy that you have. You know, if you're talking about someone who's a third 11 captain or a development 11 captain, they are going to have a different set of challenges from the guy who is the captain of the first 11, or the guy who's a county captain, or the guy who's the captain of his country. So it does depend on what you're aiming for as well, doesn't it? As well as just being able, someone who can set the field and knows how to shout at someone when they need shouting at, and pat someone on the back when they need a pat on the back.
Well, at club level, it's a classic, isn't it? Because you could be developing somebody to be a captain who's a youngster, who's coming up through the ranks, and because their cricket is likely to improve at an accelerated rate, it could be, if you put them in charge of a third 11, for example, that within six or seven games, they've got a couple of hundreds, they've bowled well or kept wicket well, and all of a sudden they've been elevated to the second 11, where they won't get the opportunity to captain on a regular basis, because it's more about their own individual player development rather than their leadership development. So yeah, it is about looking at your teams, isn't it? You know, your first team captain at club level probably is looking more towards results, although only one team can win the league, you know, each year. So it could be that you're actually looking to develop a team that will win something in 3 or 4 years' time, and then you're a different type of person in it. Whereas your development 11 captain could be one of your older guys that's played a lot of first team cricket, got a lot of experience, now has an interest in developing other players and maybe even be a coach himself. And my dad did that role for a number of years in a variety of different clubs and brought a huge number of players on as a result. And that's more of a selfless bit of leadership, isn't it? It's about the other people around him rather than the win necessarily or his own performance. So it's about fitting the right peg in the right hole, really, when it comes to club cricket, definitely.
And it really helps if the whoever is the official captain is able to judge when they've spotted someone who is a potential captain and be able to give them that little bit more responsibility, whether that's saying, I want you to set the field for the next five overs in a Sunday game, or, you know, whether it's something else. It's, you don't have to go all in, do you? You don't have to be the captain. Like you said, you know, you have different captains for different games. You may even have a different captain for a different phase of a match if you've got an older captain who thinks that a younger guy might benefit from that responsibility for 5 or 10 overs.
Definitely. You've got those examples that you've just given a classic, aren't they? And I remember watching Middlesex back in the early 90s when I was on the ground staff at Lords. I'd do the score box every now and again and, you know, turn the numbers and all of that. And Mike Gatting captained the side pretty much from third man the whole of the year. And what he was doing in that was giving himself a bit of a sort of objective view of what was going on, because he had a number of players in there that were leaders in their own right, and also he had some younger players in there. The likes of Rabakash was a young player in those days as well, and he wanted to give them opportunity. So he thought by stepping back a little bit and looking from a distance that, A, he could see things a bit more clearly in his older age, maybe. He was keeping himself out of the line of the ball too often, which was probably one of his main things. He was close to the pavilion so he could get the lunch quicker. But more importantly, he was looking to see other people come through and develop some of those leadership skills that would keep the club going way after him retiring as a as a captain. So, so you know, there's different ways of doing it. But I think the five over thing works well. I also think that when a young bowler is bowling at the time that's right for them, let them captain that, you know, their field. Let them captain how they want to bowl at people, and give them some rope really to experiment, expand, to fail, to succeed, and all of those things, and then obviously facilitate conversations around that. And that's what the best captains do. I think Alistair Cook's done it in this Ashes series, to be honest, around Ben Stokes, and Ben's obviously built up some trust with Cookie. Cookie's allowed him to bowl, particularly at left-handers. And it's been very obvious that Ben's been very much in control of his fields rather than Cookie doing that. And, you know, that's going to develop a leadership element to Ben Stokes' game, which might not ever mean that he tosses a coin for England. But as Michael Vaughan said, we want as many leaders out on that pitch as possible. One person tosses a coin, but I want 11 captains. And I think that Cookie's getting somewhere towards that now.
And if you're on the other side of that coin, if you're a young player, or even if you're not that young, but if you've got those captaincy aspirations, then you know, there's nothing wrong with taking a little bit of leadership yourself. You don't have to be captain to be a leader. I think, you know, knowing how to deal with people, for example, is a brilliant skill for all captains, and you can work on that whether you're the captain or you're not. Just because you're not setting the field doesn't mean you don't know how to motivate someone who's opening the bowling.
No, you're exactly right. But one thing I will say to anybody who's an aspiring young captain, this is something that's gone out of the game, and I'd like to see it happen in the game a little bit more, is that we're sort of in that society nowadays where people will play their game and then leave straight afterwards. And I think one of the reasons why I've ended up having a career as a captain when I played and now as a coach was because from the age of 9 through till, I don't know, 25, 26, I spent as much time as possible listening to senior players and experienced players and ex-players in the bar afterwards at club level, and also in the change rooms and in the bars around county cricket as well. Not because I enjoyed a pint, but because I enjoyed the conversations that I could earwig onto, or maybe start by asking a question and then sitting back and letting people that have got a lot more experience than I had at the time to talk to me. And I was lucky to have some brilliant people around me, both at club level and at county level. And then I did a pretty much a similar thing when I went into the England setup, was always to try and kickstart conversations or catch the end of it. So if somebody was going out with a player on the opposition team for dinner, I'd try and tag along and literally just take a seat and listen to the conversations that were going on, because you can never stop learning. But I see that going out of the club game and actually the county game, and I think that's a real shame. So when we're talking about leaders, the best way to develop them is to get them to listen in on people that have done it in the past and use their experiences to formulate their plans for the present and for the future.
Right, let's wrap up this section with a yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no. And so this week, Gareth, it's all down to you. No competition this week from Lavers, so let's see what you've got. First question. Cricket is a power sport.
No.
Second question. Being a natural requires practice.
Yep.
Last question. It takes a lifetime to master the basics.
No.
Now, this is the part of the show where we get some interaction with you, the listener. And that is a couple of questions that have been sent in by people from around the world. They're either listening to the show or perhaps they read the Pitch Vision website. And they send in their questions to us, and we do our very best to answer those questions. Hopefully we do, but whether we do that well or not, the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can find out more by heading over there. And you can send in your question to us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And there are other ways to get in touch with us, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. First question is from Wajia. Wajia says, I have a sound technique, but the problem is I'm not able to convert my 30s into high scores. I get scared to play shots because I have a fear I might get out and lose my place in the side as a good batsman. And that's why I have a very low strike rate. How should I pace my innings, and how can I overcome the fear of getting out and playing freely? Thank you from Pakistan. So, Gareth, we did talk about the fear of getting out previously on a show not that long ago. So maybe we can focus in specifically on that problem of getting a nice looking 20 or 30, but then not being able to go on and make those big scores.
Yeah, certainly. It's something that's plagued a lot of us, isn't it, over the years. And I think, again, you know, without harping on about the individual thing, when I got to 30, and this is way back when the average of 30 was deemed to be okay.
Yeah.
I used to get the 30 and think, oh, thank goodness for that, I've not failed. And then my focus used to go. Or, alternatively, I'd start focusing on getting a 50. And talking to the best batters in the world, whilst obviously their intention is to score big and to get 100 and then get 200 and all of those sort of things, what they manage to do is to stay in the here and now really well, irrespective of what ball they're facing, which bowler that they're facing, or what the situation of their particular innings is. And I think what you see with these guys is, you know, a routine. It might not be as over the top as a Trott doing his thing, but it's a way of effectively staying in the here and now rather than dwelling on what's gone or what potentially could happen in the future. They have a routine that allows them to reset their mind and go about their business and go back into their stance without anything really impacting upon the way that they're thinking, other than watching the ball and letting it come and doing what they do. And that's when people that get to 20s and 30s, that they start to convert scores into big scores. So normally what happens when we play is we get in first few balls and we're very consciously aware of what's going on. Then we start becoming less conscious about what's going on and we start to react to the ball and the conditions and what have you. And then we move up and then all of a sudden we start to get a little bit aware of how many runs we've got and what could be. And it's the what could be that gets us out often, because we take our eye off what is coming at us in that next delivery. So the best players will have a routine which enables them to go back into the crease and clear their mind. And that can be done through a number of different things, whether it be an Alex Stewart bat twirl, whether it be a Jonathan Trott scraping of the line, which basically draws a line under the previous ball and then frees his mind up to face the next one. It could be a Robin Smith back in the day doing his exercises and stretching out, and with every stretch in between each ball, he was stretching the previous ball out of his system and getting himself ready for the next. They're all very physical things. It could be as the bowler turns at the end of his mark or gets halfway through their run-up. That could be the more visual signal for the mind to just free itself and let itself go. But that's what the best players do, and that's why where you find some players who don't do that, and here's a great example of it, struggles to get beyond 20s and 30s, they don't have that process, whereas the ones that consistently score runs, once they get themselves in, score big runs, are the ones that have that process, stick to it, practice it in the nets as well. That's the other thing, you know, don't just practice it out in the middle, practice it in the nets. Make bowlers wait, make sure that you're ready to bat. As Nick Compton calls it, being emotionally ready to face the next ball. And if you can do that, then you give yourself the best chance of converting 20s into something more significant.
It's important as well to realise, if you're in that situation and you start to fear about what's going to happen in the future, it's not that the good batsmen never have those thoughts. It's that they, when those thoughts come into their head, and they naturally do, they just recognise the fact that thought's come into the head, and then they just get on with batting again. You know, they don't put a value judgment onto that thought that pops into your head. You know, everybody has those moments where they think, oh my, you know, I've done well here. I've got 30. I've got 50. Whatever that score is, we're probably going to win this game. Or, you know, I've done my job. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, I don't have to worry about it anymore. Those thoughts naturally pop into everybody's minds, but I think if you can just recognize that thought exists, and then not even ignore it, just recognize the fact that it exists and don't put any value judgment on it at all, and get on with doing the job in hand, which is just to face the next ball. It's almost like meditation, isn't it? You know, it's almost like that ability to let thoughts drift by without judging them in any way.
it's accepting it, isn't it? It's accepting that as a norm, rather than thinking, oh my God, you know, I've got this thing going on in my head and I'm the only one that ever has this. As you say, David, everybody has it, so accept it, you know, accept that that's something that's going to go on and just deal with it. Now, it's interesting because we always used to sit and watch KP bat, and when he got to 90, oh my God, I mean, all hell broke loose, because all he was looking to do, and this was a bad thing from his perspective, but fortunately he had the skill or the luck or whatever to get away with it a lot of times, but he would get to 90 and then his aim was to get to 100 in as few balls as possible, because he used to completely change the way that he thought about stuff. But obviously, as his record tells us, you know, he managed to do that. But a lot of the time when he got, you know, if I review his hundreds, a lot of the time when he got his hundreds, you know, between 90 and 100, at least one or two balls went to third man because he was just having a hack at it. But he got enough on it to get it through. So, you know, if it happens to KP, then it's probably going to happen to a few of us. And whilst he was lucky enough or strong enough or talented enough to get away with it more often than not, I'd like to have seen him handle that 90 thing better. I'd like to have seen him handle going past 150, because at one stage he couldn't get past 158. He kept getting 158.
That's right.
You know, so if it happens to him, it's going to happen to everybody. But in the end, he got past it and started to score 200s, which was really good. Paul Collingwood, on the other hand, he would always want, if a spinner was bowling, he'd always want to go to a 100 landmark or a 200 landmark by lamping him over mid-on. And you might remember back to Brisbane 2006, where he ran past one on 96, trying to hack Warnie over mid-on to get his six. Yet the next game, he got his 100, and I think he might have got his 200 in the next game by hitting the spinner. I think it was Michael Clark on one of the occasions, over the top of mid-on for six into the Barmy Army. But he was almost, you know, again, his focus had been great all the way up to his landmark, and then his mind would go, I need to get it in this specific way. He did it again against South Africa at Edgbaston in 2008, where we all knew what was going to happen. You know, Harris put two men back because he knew that Collie was going to do it, but fortunately Collie got enough of it to stick it into the stands and get his 100. But, you know, so it does happen to everybody. Accept it. And you'll find a way to move on. If you start to focus on it, then you're likely to have a repeat of what you're experiencing at the moment.
And this is quite a tricky thing to practice, in that you don't, when you go into the nets, you very rarely get the opportunity to bat for very long periods in net sessions. So it's one of those things that, you know, intuitively as a coach, you don't want to say to anyone, you're going to have to learn to do this while you're in the middle of a competition. But it's pretty much the only time that you are able to do it in a cricketing context, isn't it?
It is. And this is where I think coaches have got to maybe set up a session that is the norm and everybody's going to do it. Or equally, just say to somebody that may be struggling with this 20 to 30 thing is, you know, just play for the first 5 minutes. You've only got 10 minutes of a net. But actually, the final 5 minutes are about you assessing how many balls you faced where you were emotionally ready to face it, as opposed to how many balls can I face and hit in that last five minutes. So it becomes a quality last 5 minutes rather than a quantity last 5 minutes. And that, you know, that can just be a discussion between the batter and the coach. Nobody else needs to know about that. But you practice that enough and it will start to pay dividends in matches. If you don't practice it at all and expect it to help in matches, then, you know, that's pretty much the definition of insanity. But you know, it's about how you use your practice, and it comes down to that quality versus quantity thing. Sometimes we need to get loads of balls onto the bat and all of that, but I would suggest that more often than not, maybe the last 5 minutes of a net where you're simulating that 20 to 30 period, try and work on quality and get these routines in place. And I'd rather see somebody face six balls in the last 10 minutes, but get every single one of those right in terms of being ready for it. Because that would give me more confidence than somebody facing 30 and middling 10 and edging 20.
Yeah, it is incredible, isn't it? How often when there's, you know, in a normal net situation, you've got three or four bowlers, maybe even more. You've got one batsman, and there, how many times have the bowlers just bowl, 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 and the batsman's just rushing between each ball. They play their shot and then get ready for the next one, play their shot, get ready for the next one. And that isn't what's happening. How many times does the batsman say, hang on a minute, and he steps away, thinks about it for a moment, and then takes his stance? And that's what you would do in a game. But how often did you see that in a match? Because, you know, in nets, because in a net situation, it becomes, well, I've got to hit as many balls as I can because I've only got 10 minutes, I've only got 15 minutes.
Exactly right. No, it's, you know, you can vary that, can't you? And as coaches, we can facilitate that. And as players, we can also put that into our own practice. So whichever you are in this, in listening to this podcast, then you can take control of that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you are finding it's more of a mental thing than the number of balls that you're hitting, then there's nothing wrong with hitting fewer balls and being more mentally prepared or practicing that mental preparation. That's just as important, if not more so. Especially if you get to 30 and then keep getting out. Next question is from Nicholas. Nicholas says, I'm 18 years old and a leg spinner, and I have a slight problem. I'm worried that my action might be mixed between a fast bowler and a spinner. Is that possible? My main issue is that my lead hand is non-existent. It's like I'm bowling with one arm. Could this be the cause of trying to bowl too fast? I tried to imitate a bowler like Samuel Badri of the West Indies. What should I do?
Well, I suppose the purists would say, don't try and copy Samuel Badri to start off with, because you know, there's a lot of things happening in Badri's action, and whilst he's bowled some great spells, and he bowled a really good one against England over the winter, but you wouldn't call him a consistently strong and good spin bowler, really. And the front arm is such a pivotal thing, you know. It doesn't just help with accuracy, it also is part of that kinetic chain which allows you to transfer momentum from that arm by shortening the lever and putting it into the side of the body. As soon as that front arm starts to slow and stabilize, it also transfers the momentum across the shoulder girdle and into your bowling hand, which helps with putting spin into the ball and energy into the ball as well. So the front arm isn't just, you know, an accuracy thing. It's not just a spin thing. It's a combination of the two. And often what we find is that people that don't use their front arm then end up trying to bowl with their shoulder, their bowling shoulder, to try and put the speed and the spin into it. And ideally we want to spread that load across the whole of our body and the whole of our body bowling action in order to get the optimal result of landing the ball in the right place with the most amount of revolutions on it. So, so you may be trying to bowl too fast. Only you will know that. But I would suggest looking at the best spin bowlers in the world and looking at how their front arm has worked. There's loads of footage on YouTube that you can access for that, particularly looking at the Warns. I think Cumblay's a great one. Cumblay, if you think of down to the fast bowling principles of, you know, getting that pulling on both side screens, stuff that Ian Pont talks about, you're not looking at too much dissimilar for a leg spinner, really, or even for a finger spinner as well. And you want those two arms to be in sync rather than the front arm not working at all or working way ahead of the back arm. You look at Graham Swann from sideways on, you know, a fantastic bowler who was able to put a lot of energy into the cricket ball to make the ball dip and spin and break off of a wicket. And his front arm was a fantastic example of what we should be looking to try and develop within spinners. Otherwise, as your experience, and you're trying to do too much with your right arm, with your bowling arm, and as a result of that, it's compromising both your appropriate pace and your accuracy.
And I guess that's where, if you are thinking about that situation with the front arm, that's where you need to experiment a little bit and see how that feels to have a stronger front arm, and how much work you want to put in to get that into the right place, Gareth, you would say, wouldn't you? I mean, you know, if someone is locked in like Badri, it's going to be a lot harder for him to get a front arm which is more traditional or more orthodox than someone who's, you know, 12 years old, for example.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's great. I mean, you're 18 years old. Well, for a leg spinner, that's so young. It's really young. And I think we need to get away from judging leg spinners at 18, because the bottom line is that Shane Warne only started to really do his stuff from the age of 23, 24 onwards. And then he still had a blip and then came back and did some great stuff towards the back end of his career. It's a long career for a spinner. So you're at the right stage to make a technical adaptation. And to me, the starting point would be to get yourself into, you know, do some bowling from the crease drills. So you actually feel that and isolate that front arm. Maybe get a video camera or somebody to video you on an iPhone or an Android phone, so you can have a look at how that front arm works. But exaggerate it to start off with and see what the effect is. And once you've mastered that, or you start to feel that working within your action from the stirrups in the bowling crease, then you can start to put a little bit of run up, maybe one step into it. And in fact, I did that with a young bowler that went off to the ECB regional tournament under 15s recently. The week before, we were just doing some one step drills so he could get really back into his action to get everything syncing up together. And whether it's your front arm, as it is with you, Nicholas, or whether it's, you know, the alignment of your front leg or whatever the case may be, starting in the stirrups of the bowling crease is a really good idea to isolate what you're trying to achieve. And then once you've done that, put it under some pressure of having some momentum off one step or two steps, and then gradually take that back. And ultimately, if you can get to a point where you're off a full run-up and you're starting to use your front arm and it's playing an active part within your bowling action, then I've got no doubt that your accuracy and your pace is going to be more appropriate and more threatening to the batter. It's a point of the week where we have one of the members of the panel, and it's a toss of a coin this week with only two of us here. So I've lost it. David's going to go into bat and he's up on the soapbox.
One of the things that I have realised since taking a new role as a new coach at a new club is that if you think you know anything, as soon as you do something new, the more that you know, the more that you realise that you don't really know anything. And I've tried lots of things this year and had lots of successes and lots of not so successful things I've tried, but it's been a great experience for me throughout the entire year, and still a few weeks left to go with that. And one of the things I've really noticed is how difficult it is to make an impact as a coach in the time that you have available to the players. Even though people are very keen and they train twice a week and all the rest of it, sometimes it's down to the players as much as it's down to the coach to be able to help people. So it's been a really interesting experience for me to be able to learn that the more that you learn, the more you realise you don't know.
Well, I think we've got our name for the show anyway. When time runs out.
When time runs out, yeah. that's my usual tactic of talking up to the end and then just finishing. That fooled me because I didn't have anything to say. Well, perhaps I had too much to say. It's one of the two. Okay, and that is the end of the show for another week. Before we go, we're going to decide on the winner of this week's competition. We had a couple of questions sent in, one from Bujia about getting past 30, and one from Nicholas about his leg spin bowling and the leading hand. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Wajir's one this week. It was we've had similar questions in the past, but I think we took a different slant on it, or a slightly different approach, and hopefully that will pay some dividends for Wajir and his batting.
Yeah, congratulations to you, and if you wish to look at some of the online coaching courses and find out which one's going to be best for you, there's plenty of opportunities for the mental game and also for some technical and tactical stuff in there as well, so take a look. And Gareth, if someone wanted to send in their question to us, get it answered and have the chance to win the prize, how could they get in touch?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. You can also get us via social media. Our Twitter is @PitchVisionAcad. And our Facebook is facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. If you want to listen to this show every week, then you can also do that by going into your podcast app on your phone or other device and doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there and you can tap that subscribe button and you'll get us every week. And if you want to listen to the show in any other way, on a computer or through iTunes or something like that, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link at the top. You've got all the previous shows in there, all the show notes, a way to stream it directly off the website, and also all the ways to subscribe using any podcatching program that you wish. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.